Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Monday, August 28, 2017. I am Jason Powell. Coming up after the break for non-members, my review of the first four editions of the WWE Mae Young Classic. WWE released the first four editions of the Mae Young Classic Tournament, which featured all of the first round matches on Monday. I plowed through them, and we will certainly be getting into those. I'm going to kind of go quickly match by match, since there are 16 matches to get through. So there are going to be spoilers here. So if you're, I don't imagine that everyone's had a chance to watch these, but I would encourage you, if you want to go spoiler-free, check out, come back and listen to this once you've had a chance to catch up on everything. I will try to remember to put a link into some of the Mae Young Classic updates, so it'll be kind of handy whenever there's anything new regarding the Mae Young Classic, and that way you don't have to go searching for it. But the place to find it that is pretty easy is pwaudio.net. With that said, before we get into it, just kind of a quick explanation of how this is going to work. So they released episodes 1 through 4 on Monday, today, August 28th, and then episodes 5 through 8 are going to be released on Labor Day in the United States, so a week from today, and then the finals are going to be broadcast, I believe it's live from Las Vegas, and that'll be on Tuesday, September 12th. And when I say I'm going to get into spoilers here, this is not going to be anything future, anything going forward. It's only what is aired for these first four episodes. I'm trying to avoid spoilers as best I can for this, just because I want to watch it with a fresh perspective, and so you don't have to worry about me spoiling anything second round on. Here's an issue I have with this, because I've been, when they first announced they were going to do this on demand rather than spread this out over 8 weeks, I applauded. Netflix does it. I watch a number of shows on Netflix that I'll just plow right through if I have the time. And if I don't, for instance, The Defenders, we watched a couple of episodes recently and then got back to it over the weekend and watched a few more. So you kind of have that option, and people are accustomed to watching television that way when it comes to streaming nowadays. And so I like that. The problem here, WWE isn't really giving you any time. I mean, they're giving you 8 episodes, so they're not quite an hour, but 45 minutes to 50, whatever it is. I guess I didn't pay close attention. So they're really asking a lot of viewers, and I gotta ask, why release this on a Monday? It's a day where WWE has 3 hours of Raw programming on. Why not release the first part of this on, well, this past Friday, and then release the second batch of episodes this coming Friday, which would give people the entire weekend to catch up on things? I mean, better yet, why not just release all 8 episodes this past Friday and let people plow through them if they want to, or just watch them when time permits? As I mentioned, I'm all for WWE taking a binge viewing approach with the tournament rather than that one episode every week and dragging this out. They talked, I think it was Triple H talked about it in one of his conference calls, that when they did the Cruiserweight Classic, it just seemed like interest, I think their number showed that interest started to dwindle as the tournament went on. So, I mean, you don't want that to happen. I understand that part of it. But again, it's really a lot to ask viewers to watch 3 hours of Raw, 2 hours of SmackDown, an hour of NXT, whatever other programming you're trying to push on them, and then ask them to find 8 more hours of the tournament in just over 2 weeks' time. And granted, not every viewer has to watch the finals live, but you would think they would want this to feel like a big event, and they want you to watch it live. So why not give people a chance to actually get through the 8 episodes before you have the live special, which will feature the finals? It just kind of seems like a mistake to me to put these out there so close together. Again, at least you'd give people all of Labor Day weekend to get through 8 episodes. More than that, had they released them this past Friday, but releasing it on Monday when people are at work? Now, Labor Day they won't be, at least in the United States. I get that. But still, I mean, you're asking, it's too much. Also, I'm curious, where's Medusa? She was advertised as being a backstage interviewer, but she did not appear on these first four episodes. My guess is that she's going to appear on the next four, since they're probably going to have more time to work with. They crammed 4 matches into each episode, and they won't have to do as much of that as we go forward. But I will actually run that question by Jim Ross if I don't hear anything before then, because I will be his guest on Tuesday's Ross Report podcast. So I'll see if he can provide any details when we get together for that show, which is going to drop on Tuesday night at podcastone.com. Again, that's the Ross Report on podcastone.com. All right, now, again, we're going to be getting into spoilers. We're going to run through each of the matches and do so fairly quickly, just to keep this relatively brief. So if you don't want any spoilers for what has actually aired on the network thus far, or is available on the network thus far, check out now. But again, if you are worried about having anything spoiled for episodes that have not aired, don't worry about it. I'm not going to be doing that. I mean, I may kind of prognosticate what I kind of think is going to happen based on just guesswork. You know, I really have tried to avoid everything. So, you know, but there's not going to be any definitive spoilers for the future rounds, the Sweet 16, the Great 8, the Final Four, and none of that. But the broadcast team was Jim Ross and Lita. They were shown at a desk, which was kind of their set, because they did this in post-production. You know, Jim Ross has noted on his, I believe on his podcast and in his Ross Report blog, that they got together in the studio and did all of this, which is a good call. I mean, there's no reason for them to do this live. They don't need to, especially with Lita being, you know, fairly inexperienced when it comes to this sort of a thing. I thought they were fine. I thought they did a good job with this. I don't know how much post-production helped, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was very helpful at times. And so I thought they came off pretty well. But the opening match of this was Princessa Suhai defeating Kaylee Ray in the opener via submission. It was a solid match. It just really wasn't, it lacked that wow factor that's going to just hook you on the rest of the tournament that I thought we might see in the opener. But it was okay. You know, there's nothing really wrong with it. I thought the video package basically told the story of what was to come, because they did video packages, you know, just kind of brief spotlights on each wrestler before their matches. And with Kaylee Ray, she talked about being a daredevil. And so it's like, okay, is the daredevil stuff going to help her win the match? Or is it going to be she crashes and burns? And I kind of suspected it would be crash and burn, because Suhai is the legend of the two, and I didn't figure she was just going to be in for a one and done. And sure enough, Suhai ended up going over with an armbar submission. Then in the second match, it was Serena Deeb defeating Vanessa Bourne to advance in the tournament. They had female referee Jessica Carr work the match. I remember seeing a story on the WWE website recently saying that she is a full-time official now for WWE. Deeb is on the, you know, she's telling the redemption story. I thought it was kind of cool in her pre-match video. She talked about how she was with the Straight Edge Society, but then she said that she used alcohol irresponsibly and the consequences were handed to her. And she said the tournament is redemption for her, and she would outwork everyone else. So nice, easy to get behind story. Even if you're a newer fan who wasn't around for Straight Edge Society, I think it's kind of easy to go, oh, that's cool. You know, that she's turned her life around. And they did have various wrestlers in the crowd at different times. Naomi was at ringside, and then we'll get to others as if hopefully I'll remember most of them as I read along through my review. By the way, you can find my review of all four shows on the main page of ProWrestling.net as well. But Serena Deeb ended up defeating Vanessa Bourne to advance in the tournament. Deeb ended up avoiding a splash and then performed a spear for the win. No surprise to see Serena Deeb go over, considering she had the better story of the two. And Bourne at this point is still pretty green. So, you know, she did so, you know, as I mentioned in my review, she showed some personality in her video package, and it wasn't a bad match. Then we had Charlie Caruso check in from the control center, and there wasn't much. Charlie Caruso wasn't asked to do much. She'd stand there, and then they had like the giant brackets behind her, and she'd basically set up the video packages. So there really wasn't much to what she was doing. But we ended up with a video on Shayna Baszler and Zeta heading into their match. And Zeta talked about being bullied most of her life and not having a superhero to look up to. And she said that she took up martial arts as self-defense with the goal of becoming that superhero. And talked about, don't underestimate me. I'm not afraid to fight. And then Shayna Baszler, if the name's familiar, she is one of the MMA Four Horsewomen with Ronda Rousey. And so she has a long career in MMA, but now she is transitioning transitioning to pro wrestling, and she talked about how her style isn't going to change. It's just a different rule set in pro wrestling. And they actually had the other members of the Four Horsewomen in the crowd for the match, which was pretty cool, considering, you know, Ronda Rousey is such a big deal. Now, I don't know if they couldn't do it, if there's something with UFC where they... I mean, they let her appear on camera, so I would think that WWE probably had the option of talking with Ronda Rousey. And I know there's not a lot of time. Maybe they'll get to it. You know, I was going to say not a lot of time in these first round matches. Maybe we'll get that later in the tournament, since Shayna Baszler did beat Zeta to advance in the tournament. But it just seemed like kind of a lost opportunity. Boy, I'd interview her multiple times. She's still, even though, you know, her star has fallen a little bit, she's not at the peak of her stardom now that she's lost fights and everything. But still, that's a nice get for WWE to have her in attendance. The match itself was just kind of a showcase for Baszler. She gave up a little bit of offense to Zeta, but this was about getting over Shayna Baszler in a big way. And she ended up performing a neck breaker and applied a choke hold and got the win that way. And the referee quickly called for the bell. So Shayna Baszler goes over. And I think WWE is definitely going to spotlight her in this tournament in a big way. I'm curious to see how they get her out of this, assuming she doesn't go all the way. I mean, who knows? But you would think they're going to really protect her. And I would think they're going to be very excited about having Shayna Baszler. And potentially, you know, you never know. There's been all sorts of rumblings. Ronda Rousey eventually making her way to WWE as well. We got a video package on the Jazzy Gabbert and Abby Laith match. Jazzy Gabbert worked as Alpha Female, and she's been all over the place, but she did, for American, she did have a run on TNA Impact Wrestling at one point. Meanwhile, Abby Laith works as Kimberly, and the match was an upset. That's the way it was positioned, because Jazzy Gabbert, a.k.a. Alpha Female, is... just very much, you know, badass looking. She's muscular. She just, you know, just looks like she's on the verge of destroying someone at any second. She really, you know, looks the part. But Abby Laith was able to get the upset win. She did a lot of selling. Gabbert picked her up for a power move, but Laith ended up rolling her up and getting the pin. And then I was waiting for an angle after the match. And, you know, we kind of got one, I guess, but it was the referee bringing the women together, raising the hand of Laith, who was pretty emotional at this point. And Gabbert ended up approaching her and looked menacing at first, but then ended up pulling her in for a hug and raised her arm and pointed at her. And the whole time I kept waiting for Paul Orndorff clothesline on Hulk Hogan. Never happened. So they just had Jazzy Gabbert, a.k.a. Alpha Female, put over Abby Laith / Kimberly. It'll be interesting to see how Abby Laith does in WWE, because, you know, she's a little soft around the midsection, and I do believe that, you know, I think WWE would be wise to push, you know, especially when it comes to women. And I don't think it would, I fear that Vince McMahon would be, and Kevin Dunn would be hung up on it. I mean, people come in all different shapes and sizes, no doubt about that. And so, I mean, I don't know if she's going to be pressured to get herself into better shape, if that's something that hopefully times have changed, and you know, I mean, they're just going to go along with it, and maybe even turn it into a positive somehow by making her seem like more of an every woman type. You know, it's one thing to do well in the Mae Young Classic, and it's another thing to actually get a push by Vince McMahon, or even be elevated to the main roster if Vince McMahon doesn't like someone's physique, as we know. And so, hey, I mean, she's getting a chance here. I hope it goes well. She did go over, and they said that she would face the winner of Marty Bell and Rachel Evers in round two. And then as far as the opening match, I should note that Serena Deeb will end up, or I'm sorry, the second match, Serena Deeb will end up facing the winner of Piper Niven and Santana Garrett. And in the opening match, we found out that Princesa Suhai will face the winner of Xia Li and Mercedes Martinez. So that was episode one. And, you know, we just got kind of a brief recap afterwards and kind of a little bit of a preview of what was to come in episode two. The best match on night one, or the, you know, the first episode, would be the main event. So, but I mean, it's worth going out of your way to see, because Shayna Baszler is involved. You know, it's definitely, you know, if you're looking to skip anything, I would say make sure you watch episode one, just to kind of get a feel for some of those participants. And, there may be certain matches along the way you can skip, but if you do have time for everything, I recommend you watch everything. Just to, it reminded me of the Cruiserweight Classic round one did in that, okay, it really was about showcasing the talents. It wasn't about wowing people with, spectacular matches here and there. This was just about establishing the personas, and it really worked well in the Cruiserweight Classic. I don't think it worked as well here, but it, hey, it's important they do that. You have to let people know who these talents are, in order for these fans to, connect with them. You need to know what the personas are, what characters they play, what qualities they have. Should you like them? Should you dislike them? That sort of a thing. The first match on the second show was Mercedes Martinez defeating Xia Li to advance in the tournament. Li is new, but man, she has a cool thing going where she comes out and she has like the hand fans that she uses as part of her entrance. I think she has a good look. She throws some good kicks, so she's new, but someone to keep an eye on, long term, I think. She ended up losing, to a modified Dragon Sleeper, Jim Ross called it, and it was a pretty cool move. Martinez billed as one of the two veterans in this, like as far as having the most in-ring experience. Lita pointed out that her second round opponent, Princess Suhai, and her are the two most experienced women in the tournament. So kind of a nice touch there. The second match was Rachel Evers, who is the daughter of Paul Ellering, defeating Marty Bell. Marty Bell, if that name sounds familiar to any of you, she worked in TNA. She was part of the Dollhouse faction, and then when the group split, she had a boy, just a disappointing feud with Jade, who is also in this tournament that we'll get to in a little bit. It's just Marty still, it just I don't know. I mentioned in my review that I think she would benefit from, some time at the WWE Performance Center. I think just there's certain aspects of her game that just look like they could use polishing, and that's, coming from someone with a novice eye, even. I'm not a wrestler, but when I, things jump out at me, it's like, ooh, that looks a little unnatural and awkward. That's not a good sign. And so, I just think there's something there. She has some talent, but it needs some polish. But Evers ended up winning with a face-first plant, as Jim Ross described it. Oh, I'm sorry, actually, Bell hit that move, but it was Evers coming right back with an inside cradle for the win. So the daughter of Paul Ellering, who uses the last name of her trainer, Lance Storm, his real last name, ends up being victorious. I just didn't think this was a very good match. And it wasn't terrible or anything, just was a bit rough. And like I say, I think Marty Bell couldn't. I think there's something there. And WWE, it's not that I wouldn't let this match scare them off, basically. I just think that she's someone who could benefit from a run at the Performance Center. Then Ross pointed out that new signees, American Ninja Warriors, Casey Catanzaro, and I'm going to butcher this one, Shadia Basio, were in the crowd. I remember Chris Shore, when he was with the site, was very big on Casey, because and her ability on American Ninja Warrior, just raving about how impressive she was on that show. That's long before he ever knew she was going to be a wrestler. And then Casey is someone that they signed following a tryout in Dubai. And then we had footage airing of Paul Triple H Levesque addressing the tournament entrance at the Performance Center. He congratulated them and wished them luck. There really wasn't much to this. By the way, the whole thing opened with a Stephanie McMahon narrated video. Because, Stephanie brings us all women's wrestling in WWE, or something like that. Then the next match, it was Rhea Ripley defeating Miranda Salinas to advance in the tournament. I was really impressed by Rhea Ripley. She's 20 years old. She definitely, we were talking about just the fact that some women, Kimberly, for instance, may not have that look that Vince McMahon appreciates. Well, I think Rhea Ripley does, and she's one to keep an eye on because she, even though she's green, she looked really confident in there. I mean, she just, If there was any panic in her in this situation, she didn't show it. I thought she did a hell of a job with that. She ended up winning with the full Nelson Slam, and she will face the winner of Dakota Kai and Kavita Devi in the second round. But definitely keep an eye on her. I don't know how far she'll go in this tournament, but I like what I saw there. Definitely someone that I think has a bright future, especially being that young. That's crazy. Then we saw Beth Phoenix and Natalya in the crowd, and in the fourth match and main event of the second show, it was Mia Yim defeating Sarah Logan. Sarah Logan worked as Crazy Mary Dobson on the independent scene. She's been in NXT using the Sarah Logan name, and then Mia Yim is the artist formerly known as Jade in TNA, and I still can't understand why Global Force let Mia Yim get away, because she was really just starting to click there. I thought she did a good job in Dollhouse. She's always been very good in the ring. Personality-wise, I remember talking with John Moore about this in an edition of .NET Weekly, or maybe even a TNA roster edition, roster evaluation edition of .NET Weekly, and she just, her promos, it always felt like she was playing a character that someone else wanted her to play, that really wasn't true to who she was, and she was forcing it. And then by the end, she just strikes me as someone, kind of a maybe a Tom girl type, if you will, just somebody a little rough around the edges. And once she was able to kind of just be herself, she cut good promos. And so I would hope that we're going to see more of her in WWE beyond just this tournament. Sarah Logan, I believe, is under developmental deal, and for good reason. This was the early standout of the tournament. There were, I enjoyed other matches more as the tournament went on, but this was a good quality main event for the second match, or for the second episode. Yim going over, and she performed Gail Kim's finisher, which she took a time or two, I'm sure, in TNA. She did use the Eat Defeat and got the clean win, but this was a good back and forth match. And I was, there were a couple of times in this, maybe even a few times watching, where it's like, man, I wish this wasn't. I'm going to enjoy this as a first round match, but I wish it wasn't a first round match, because I want, it's a shame that one of these women has to go so early in the tournament, and that's the case with Logan. It's disappointing to see her go, but she put over him, and I think Yim is someone who should go fairly deep in this tournament. She, I'm trying to think if they said who she will face next. Oh, maybe she won't. She's facing Shayna Baszler, so one of the two have to lose in the next round, and I don't know who that's going to be. Yim is a veteran. I mean, I guess if you wanted to have Baszler have an early exit, maybe just the veteran found a way to get by the relative newcomer to pro wrestling, but I don't know. Now there's a match that, all right, that's two matches in a row with Mia Yim, where I'm like, it's too bad somebody has to lose, because wow, that's I'm surprised to see that. I didn't really, I just was kind of moving quickly as I reviewed the show, and I didn't really put two and two together. But yeah, that'll be an interesting one. Now we're up to the third episode of the Mae Young Classic, and in the opener for this, it was Toni Storm defeating Aisha Raymond to advance in the tournament. Aisha Raymond is, I guess, I'm trying to think of what her gimmick was. Oh, she's the deadlift diva. She can deadlift over 210 kilos, and she wore cat makeup because she sees felines as being strong, and that's how she portrays herself in the ring, she said. And then on the other side, Toni Storm said she doesn't think people realize what's inside of her. She said she just does in the ring. Just doesn't in the ring and takes heads off. And then she said, "Poor girl, I'm sorry in advance for the damage that I will be causing you." Ross pointed out that Raymond was discovered at a WWE tryout in Glasgow, Scotland. Storm has a fun entrance. She wears like a tiny top hat kind of a thing, and Jim Ross had some fun joking about if his hat looked like that. I think it should. And then Lita talked about how she really enjoys that Toni Storm just transforms when her music hits into a different kind of a person. And it was Toni Storm going over. It was kind of a weird finish. You had Raymond dropping down from the ropes after knocking Storm to the mat. And so I don't know if she just felt like her opponent wasn't, Storm wasn't in the right position for what she wanted to do next, and it was kind of a botch, or if they thought that was more that was the finish they were going for, where, all right, she dropped down and got cocky, because she did play to the crowd, healing it up on them, and then she went up top, for a splash, and of course Storm moves out of the way and ends up rolling up Raymond for the pin. Storm is going to face the winner of Lacey Evans and Tamara Conti in round two. But yeah, the finish of the match, I don't really feel like it did Storm any favors either. So this was one of those where I can't even say it really protected Raymond, because I thought she looked bad for not just going for her move and opting to play to the crowd, and then Storm just rolling her up off of that. I don't feel like gained much, but I think Storm, it definitely has good charisma and is going to be a crowd favorite in this as long as she's around in the tournament. They're going to, I think, get behind her persona. So she goes over, but you know, she'll be fine, but the match itself I don't think really did her much favors. Then they showed Charlotte Flair and Sarah Motto in the crowd. Sarah Motto is the wrestler formerly known as Sarah Del Rey, and she is now a longtime trainer at the WWE Performance Center. And then we had a video package on Kavita Devi and Dakota Kai. And Devi is Indian. She said she was trained by Great Khali, and they billed her as the first Indian woman in a WWE ring. And Kai talked about being from New Zealand, and she's a girl next door type and friendly, but she changes once she enters the ring. And she talked about her style being quick and evasive. She does a lot of strikes, and she kicks hard. She is also known on the independent scene as Evie. And so if you haven't made the connection, Evie is who she works at, the name she works by. Evie, a.k.a. Dakota Kai, ended up winning this. Devi is just, I didn't really care for the gear they had her in. I can't even really describe it, but she's power. I assume that Devi is pretty limited in terms of experience. And so pretty green here. And I thought they did a pretty good job of protecting that. You know, she is, with that power lifter background, they had her kind of use her strength. She performed a military press at one point. And, you know, Kai works from underneath. She's the underdog. And so it worked. Even though Debbie is limited, or seemingly pretty limited, I thought Kai was able to get over here. The crowd really liked her. She avoided Debbie charging at her and blasted her with the big boot in the corner at one point, and then Kai followed up with a double stomp from the top rope, a.k.a. the coup de grace, and got the win. So Dakota Kai goes over, and I think she made a really good impression. Crowd really liked her, and so even though her opponent wasn't all that experienced, I think people do like Kai. And it'll be interesting to see how far she goes, of course, in this. I don't know if I'd noted who she faces next. I'm sure we'll get to it as we move forward. They did show some, Rock family members in the crowd. Danny Garcia, his ex-wife, the mother of his daughter, and his current and longtime business partner. Also, Simone Johnson, who is Dwayne The Rock Johnson's daughter, and The Rock's mother as well, plus family member Nia Jax was with them. So you had a little bit of Samoan family royalty there sitting in the crowd. Then we had a video package air on Bianca Belair and Sage Beckett. I should say, you know, I mentioned earlier it would have been nice to hear from Ronda Rousey. Maybe we will later, maybe we won't. I hope we hear from some of these people. I mean, it's kind of what they do at Full Sail. They have the... They're celebrity types, whether it's a wrestler or an actual celebrity, go into the crowd, sit there, in most cases, just long enough to appear on camera, and then they go backstage. And that's nice, but, you know, I mean, this was kind of a surprise. I didn't expect those four to be there. That was cool. Well, nah, yeah, I guess I shouldn't have been surprised, but Rock's daughter and his ex-wife and his mom all being there, that was pretty cool, you know, and be nice to hear from them. So hopefully, again, we do later, and it's more than just get that quick shot of him in the crowd. But as far as the video package, Belair is the one that has the very long braided hair, and she said it's a lethal weapon. And Sage Beckett talked about how she's not a witch, she's a shaman who uses the air, the earth, and the fire within her when she enters the ring. I'm like, okay. Wow, she worked at one time as Rosie Lottolove in TNA. She was also known, as Betsy Ruth on the independent scene. And she lost nearly 130 pounds. And I don't even think they talked about this during the match, but she completely changed her look and her gimmick. I mean, I wouldn't have even known had I not, like, all right, who is she? And did a quick search to kind of learn a little bit about her. It's like, oh my God, that is her. So good for her, man. That's really cool that she was able to. I think, if memory serves, I believe she was. I think she retired at one point due to some health issues, and then just, ended up dropping all this weight and was able to return. So that's really cool. So it's a character that just because of that story, I would have liked to have seen more of. Belair, I don't really get the name. When I hear Bianca Belair, I think of like some mean girl type, rich debutante type. Just kind of your traditional. It would fit that for, the traditional wrestling heel type. And instead, she's just her gimmick is anything but. I mean, she just has this like I said, really long braid, which she used as a whip late in the match, and ended up then slamming or spearing Beckett and pinning her. Belair had a bloody mouth after the match. I didn't catch what caused it, but Belair is going to face Kairi Sane and Tessa Blanchard's winner in the second round. So, yeah, I mean, Belair, you probably, if you've seen the videos for this, they've been showcasing that. I know it stood out to my buddy Dave. He reached out to me about I don't even know if he knew her name. I don't remember, but certainly was talking. I maybe it was when he was over for SummerSlam. We were talking about her hair being, incorporated in. We'll see if she has other ways of using it. If it's just kind of as a whip, I mean, it's okay. If it's on TV enough, it's going to start to kind of lose its effect. If it's just kind of overexposed, so hopefully she's got some. I mean, you always choke somebody with it, whatever. So we'll see what else she has. If there's more to it than just that, the whip thing that she does with it. Then it was time for the main event of the third show with Santana Garrett and Piper Niven. Garrett is someone, well, they've labeled her as WWE's Wonder Woman. She's a Florida independent who's been all over the place. I remember Scott Hall really praising her heavily online at one point, and I remember seeing her when she was pretty green, and she's come a long way. She has a really good look, and I don't understand. I don't believe she's under contract to WWE. I don't. She was on GFW since they became GFW even, and she was in TNA at one point. I'm not sure why she hasn't ended up being signed by anyone because she definitely has a good look and she's talented, but just hasn't. I don't know if she's hesitant or just hasn't been offered. I'm not quite sure. She is gone from the tournament. Piper Niven defeated her. Piper Niven is like a plus size wrestler, I guess is the way to describe it. Heavy set girl, and I kind of assumed she was going to win because of that, just because it is like she stands out. There's something different about her. She's unique, power, size, that sort of a thing that makes her stand out as being different from some of the others that they have advancing in the tournament. And so she did win with the Michinoku driver. She will face Serena Deeb in round two. But this was good. I like this. I thought this was a good competitive match. The fans were into the near falls. They were believable for both sides. And so just a good competitive match that led to Piper Niven going over and advancing. That was it for the third edition of the Mae Young Classic. We are on to show number four. And this opened up with Candice LeRae defeating Renee Michel in round one. Candice LeRae, they did acknowledge that she is the wife of Johnny Gargano, who was in the crowd. She mentioned in her video package that she kind of fancies herself as a modern-day Mighty Mouse. Vince McMahon may fall in love because for the longest time he's been rumors of Vince. What is the story on that? Neville was rumored at one point. It didn't go anywhere. Maybe plans changed, or I don't know. But there's been talk that Vince McMahon. I think Bruce Pritchard may have addressed this on one of his podcasts as well. But Vince McMahon like fancies like the mask wrestlers that he kind of sees as being. Like Mighty Mouse is an inspiration, so I don't know if Vince hears that, he might think this is great. So maybe you'll see Candice LeRae in a Mighty Mouse mask or something at some point. I doubt it, but that did pop into my mind when she said that. Yeah, she ends up going over a what is it, Miss LeRae's Wild Ride off the second rope for the win. Johnny Gargano was in the crowd at ringside and applauded for his wife before and after the match. One thing, keep an eye on Renee Michel because she has a really exotic look, and she's athletic. She's green, but with some time here, I could see WWE getting excited about her as a talent in NXT and onward and upward. But Candice, I think there's a role for her as kind of the veteran who finally cracked, kind of like what TNA teased they were going to do with Braxton Sutter and then never really followed through on it, where she's this person who's waited a long time to finally get her opportunity. She finally gets into NXT after all this time. And yeah, she's not the youngest and all of that. She's not the youngest female wrestler or anything. She's a veteran, but she's finally getting her chance, and she's good enough and charismatic enough where I think the live crowd would get behind that and really support her. I don't know how far she's going to go in this. She's going to face the winner of Nicole Savoy and Reyna Gonzalez in the second round. But yeah, Michelle, I just thought, has a very exotic look. They said she's like part Cuban, part Native American. They made it seem like there was a lot of other ethnicities thrown in there too. Her look was that of like, she had like a Native American theme going. And I don't know that it really worked for her. It just, I mean, it's part of her heritage. She can go ahead and play it up if she wants to. But it's just, I wouldn't, just looking at her, it was like, I don't know if that's the approach I would take. If, you know, if I were the one kind of in it making that decision as far as what her character should be. It just didn't really seem to fit. But I definitely like what I saw, and I think there's some potential there for her. But again, very, you know, pretty green. It's going to take some time, but remember that name. Then we had a video package that showcased Tainara Conti and Lacey Evans. Evans is a Marine. I've learned to never say former Marine, because once a Marine, always a Marine, I've been told. See, you guys who have emailed me, it paid off. But she is. She said that she's a wife, a mother, a sister. I must have said a daughter, too, probably. She spoke about proving to the world that everything is possible. And then Conti spoke in Brazilian and mentioned that she has been training in judo for 15 years and talked about destroying every person she faces. They did show Alexa Bliss in the crowd. And then the match itself was Lacey Evans defeating Tainara Conti. It was weird. Evans is like this, she reminds me so much of the Debbie Egan character from the Glow series, and I'm not going to get any spoiler, but just like she plays this kind of, she's a mom and she's all American, that sort of a thing. But when she comes out, she has like this skirt on, and then she whips it off, and then she does this almost like oops and blush routine that really doesn't fit with the Marine. I don't know, just feels like there's a different way to present her than what they're going with that I think would be more beneficial. But Ross was very high on Conti, and just even though she lost the match, he talked about, he doesn't expect that to be happening very often going forward. He also said she's someone who's been on WWE's radar for a number of years, and I think there's some potential there as well. I want to say he said she was like 21 years old. So, I mean, it's some of these women who are very green, yet young, you can see why, it's just the athleticism, the look, there are certain things they have going for them that you can tell, like, you can see why WWE would be excited by them. But, Evans, she's going to face Toni Storm in round two, and I'm curious to see how she does in terms of match performance and things. But yeah, I'd like to see them kind of shake up the character that they have for her, because it really didn't do much for me. And then it was time for the setup for the Nicole Savoy and Reyna Gonzalez match. Nicole Savoy ended up winning this as far as her character setup. Well, first they started with Gonzalez, and her father, Ricky, was a journeyman pro wrestler Jim Ross described. They showed him briefly. I think he was even in an AWA ring. I'm not quite sure, because I just kind of looked up while I was doing the review, and I'm like, I think that was AWA. Savoy talked about being the queen of suplexes, and she said she's one of the best in the world, and it was go time. Well, the queen of suplexes really didn't perform any suplexes. That was kind of odd. Gonzalez is a college basketball player. Jim Ross said she's a legit 6 feet tall. So she was kind of doing the power. She seemed pretty green. Savoy ended up not hitting her with suplexes to win. Instead, she used a cross arm breaker. And I thought the best part of this match was the finish, because I really liked the way that Savoy ended up she applies the hold, and Gonzalez is like holding on, blocking it, just like you would see in an actual MMA fight. And eventually, though, Savoy kind of kicks her free so she can completely extend the arm. And so it just looked believable. It looked good. And I like that. So, yeah, that was the finish was the best part. Savoy is going to face Candice LeRae in round two. So that one, Savoy, not much of a look there. I guess, Gonzalez, her big thing is the height. Savoy didn't like jump out in a major way, but she had some ability, and I really want to see her perform those suplexes. And if she really is this suplex whiz, Candice LeRae will be a fun opponent for her. And so I'm kind of taking a to be determined type of approach when it comes to what I think of Savoy. It just she didn't really jump out in a major way in this opener. But then we had a video package that focused on the last of the matches of the first four. They saved the best for last. It was Tessa Blanchard and Kairi Sane. Kairi Sane was known as Kairi Hojo in Japan. Tessa Blanchard is the daughter of Tully Blanchard, the granddaughter of the late Joe Blanchard, and she said that it's time that she makes her own name. Jim Ross did point out that even though she's Tully Blanchard's daughter, she was essentially partially raised by Magnum TA, who married her mother after she was born. And so, that's kind of a unique story, to say the least. And then Sane spoke mostly in Japanese, and I think she kind of introduced herself and then went into Japanese. And she talked about having an original style. They showcased her entrance, and she said that she's the only representative from Japan in this tournament, and her goal obviously was to win it. And the translation noted that she said, "Please cheer for me." I like that. Simple, but I liked it. Shinsuke Nakamura was shown in the crowd, got a big reaction. He was playing into it, and then it was time for the main event of the opening round matches, and it was Kairi Sane defeating Tessa Blanchard to advance in the tournament. This was really good. I really like this. This was my favorite match of the opening round. I thought they did a great job. I mean, I assume Kairi Sane was going to go over. She's the big international name. WWE very excited about her. I don't is Tessa Blanchard under contract to WWE? I'm not sure. If she's not, they should get her under contract. She has some talent, that's for sure. And I thought, she really stepped up. It had been a while since I've seen Tessa Blanchard work, and it's always fun, when you see somebody that's I not that I've had a ton of exposure to her matches, but I remember seeing an early one. And it was an early match. It was rough, and you still just like wanted to see it because it was Tully's daughter, and she's really come a long way. It's really cool when you just see that progression from people, and she did a great job here. Sane was the star, but you did have some people chanting for Tessa as well. I mentioned earlier, one of those cases where you hate to see someone lose and be eliminated in the first round. You'd like to see more of them in the tournament. Tessa certainly fits that description. She did a really good job. One of the cool moves, I don't know what you'd call it. It was a backstabber. I guess it was kind of, well, I called it a front stabber jokingly, but I guess it's a similar. What's the Jericho move? I can't remember what. Codebreaker. I guess that's what it was. But she did it from the ropes, and it looked really good, and she got a near fall out of that. It was just a really cool spot. I guess I'm kind of neglecting to mention the Sane entrance. She comes out. I think she's wearing like a sailor, skipper hat or something, and she has like a boat steering wheel. And Ross explained that the reason that she does this is because she's a yacht person. I've never heard someone describe that way, but she's a yacht person, and so that's what she does. It's like, even without getting that explanation before seeing it, it's like, this is kind of strange, but it's oddly effective. She just has charisma, and she seemed like a likable personality, and especially if you were told, "Please cheer for me," how could you not cheer for the woman? So I mean, it was definitely different. The crowd, I think a lot of them were familiar with her based on the crowd reaction, and they were excited about it. Her in-ring gear, once she kind of got rid of that stuff, was pretty cool. And but yeah, just a really good competitive match with some nice near falls. It was hard to believe that Sane was going to lose, as I mentioned, but still, I thought it was a very entertaining. I enjoyed this, and Sane performs a great top rope elbow. She really gets up there on that. She ended up hitting that for the win and getting the clean win. She's going to face Bianca Belair. I think I mentioned that earlier, in the second round. And then Tessa was emotional afterward as the referee was raising Sane's hand, and then she clapped and hugged Sane and raised her hand before bowing and leaving the ring. And again, I was like, is she going to take her out? It's not what WWE really did with the Cruiserweight Classic. Maybe we'll get something like that a little bit later. The reason that I was hoping Tessa was going to do it, I mean, my guard is always up in pro wrestling. I think everyone's is. When you see two people shaking hands, and I mentioned earlier the Paul Orndorff type of when he turned on Hogan with the big clothesline, you kind of wait for a moment like that. But when it comes to these tournaments, WWE hasn't really played it that way. But maybe we see something like that as we move on. Tessa, I wanted to see do it just because, yeah, she's not moving forward, but you'd remember that. And that would be a sign that, hey, maybe they intend to go back to these two, not in the tournament, but at NXT or something. Well, we could see something along those lines happen later on in the tournament. And again, I don't know because I have avoided spoilers. So I guess Zayn is my favorite to win. Simply because she is the new sensation, that as far as WWE is concerned, bringing her in a big signing for them. But I mean, there's I don't even have the brackets handy, so I mean, maybe it's too obvious. Especially, they just had Asuka, the long, the Japanese star that was the longtime NXT champion. Would they feel like it's too similar? I don't think it is. So I would hope that doesn't stand in the way. But they, it may just be, well, they give her a strong introduction in this tournament, but she doesn't actually win it. They save. She ends up being eliminated somehow. I would assume she's protected, and then it gives her character something to overcome at a later date. I'm not sure, but I look forward to seeing the rest. I thought, again, the first round overall just kind of set up. You kind of get to know the personalities. I came away from the Cruiserweight Classic feeling like, I not that I knew more about those personalities, just that there was more there that I was excited by than I am with the women and the video packages that they did on them. And that's in most cases. I mean, it's just there are some situations where I thought they did a nice job of effectively showcasing what certain talents were about. But I just, again, I thought the Cruiserweight Classic was better with that. I remember looking forward to the next rounds more than I'm looking forward to the Mae Young Classic second round. But it doesn't mean I'm not looking forward to it. It just means I felt like the Cruiserweight Classic was a little more effective. And maybe some of that, too, is the benefit of that being first, where it's like, wow, they're getting this right. Where now it's kind of like, well, the standard has been set, and they've shown they can do it right, and hopefully they'll do it again here. But yeah, it's so I don't want to spend too much time comparing the two, but I would hope we get some better matchups moving forward. There wasn't a lot of wow factor there, and I think when you're playing to the WWE Network audience, and you're asking them to watch 8 hours of programming in 2 weeks, you're really playing to the super fans. And I think a lot of those super fans really want some in-ring spectacles, and we didn't get as much of that as I'd hoped for in the early rounds. But hey, like I said, Cruiserweight Classic didn't have. It was more about showcasing the personalities and the characters than it was, really trying to go out there and just deliver great match after great match. And so that part, I guess, is kind of similar. But hopefully, we get some better ones going forward. That's going to do it for today, everybody. A long edition of the All Access Daily Podcast, but I wanted to give you guys the full review, my full thoughts on round one. I do have more thoughts. If you want are looking for more details, again, check out my written reports on those, which are available on the main page at ProWrestling.net right now. And I'm sure we'll be doing something similar here as we move forward with the tournament, but not on Labor Day, because it's Labor Day. But I'm sure I will be doing more reviews of this probably starting Tuesday and maybe into Wednesday as well. But certainly look for additional Mae Young Classic Tournament reports on the main page, and I'm sure we'll do more in audio form as well. I was hoping to hear from Will Pruitt before we recorded. He is going to be joining me for .NET Weekly on Wednesday, and I'm hoping he's going to be able to see the shows before then. And if he does, we'll talk more about the Mae Young Classic, get Will's thoughts on things. If not, well, I wouldn't be surprised if he spent some time talking with Jake Barnett and the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast about it. That'll give him a couple more days to work with. But one way or another, Will Pruitt will be joining me. Members, I'll be by later on this evening with the WWE Raw audio review, and I should point out Q&A is just going to be pushed back a day due to the fact that, well, I had 4 episodes of the Mae Young Classic to cover. So if you still want to submit some questions for that, the thread is open in my section of the forum, and I will talk to you again very soon. Until next time, take care.